And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And full show. The big news here is Visual Studio 2010 Service Pack 1.
Yes, it finally got released.
So a lot of developers probably, maybe they've played with the beta, maybe they haven't, trying to give you everything that developers are going to want to know about it. So one is, just start with Soma's blog post.
Yes.
He does the recap. So we have Visual Studio SP1 that we're going to talk about.
Yep.
TFS project server integration, Visual Studio load test feature pack,
yep,
and then Visual Studio Light Switch Beta 2.
Yes.
So let's get right into it. So this is from Jason Zander's blog, SharePoint.
Yes.
You doing SharePoint development? No.
Sure.
No means yes.
Not.
Silverlight 4.
Yes,
Silverlight 4.
That I am doing. So the nice thing is now the Silverlight tools are included, so you don't have to go get a separate download. You know, install it. It's nice now because all I have to do is install the VS, install the SP1, and I'm up and going.
Yeah. Win7 specific MFC APIs. So I'm sure Charles is very excited. We now have support for Direct2D, DirectWrite, and Windows Animation Technologies.
Yes.
Now, what's this unit testing one about?
So unit testing, if you had a .NET 3.5 application, the only way you could get the unit test to work on it is if the unit tests were .NET 4.0. Mm-hmm. And that posed a lot of certain issues with certain scenarios. So now with Visual Studio 2010 SP1, you can have your unit tests in .NET 3.5 as well. So
okay.
Then that will resolve that issue.
Cool. IntelliTrace 64-bit support, which is great. Everyone loves IntelliTrace.
Yes.
Performance Wizard for Silverlight. So this is kind of cool. It actually analyzes the performance. You can see things like startup, how many objects you have in real time. So that's clearly something that a lot of developers have been asking for. And then this last one, the VB compiler runtime switch, VBC, the compiler, basically what you could do is tell it to ignore some of the old school commands. So the idea is here you can use it where you don't need the full VB runtime. And the idea is that this will make it easier to build VB apps that don't have that runtime requirement.
So it's kind of like a client framework versus the full framework.
Yeah. Well, it's probably more complicated.
I know. I'm just...
I can't help but notice in subsection A that you guys did not. I think there's a lot of things for everybody from front-end developers, Silverlight developers, MFC devs.
The nice thing is you can download the SP1 now even if you don't have an MSDN subscription.
Right. And one of the big things that a lot of people, and I know Niners have specifically been asking for, is better local help. And how could you guys abandon local help? So the SP1 help viewer, Jeff Breden, I think, had the blog post on it, walks through. So it has the navigating the table of contents. And really, I'd say this is a return to like the 2008 style, where you have a table of contents view that you can, is a tree view that you can go jump into. There's a keyword index, so you can just start typing, and it gives you the results. So I can see where system.string is used.
Yeah.
Things like saving favorites, not something I necessarily use, but view history actually is, because I was like, oh, man, I found the one piece of documentation that I had that I tend to use history more than favorites.
Yeah,
but.
For me, favorites for the phone SDK, like I'm always looking up resources, like the style guide cheat sheet. So for me, like that would be huge.
So one thing to keep in mind, after you install Service Pack 1, what you have to do is go to Help, Manage Help Settings, and then do the Choose Online Local Helper Install Content from Online. So Jeff's post actually goes through it, because you won't see that behavior. You have to actually change the Help Manager, Help Library Manager, to point to that new Help Viewer. So... now that you have it installed, now we can tell you where you're going to fail, which is the known incompatibilities. So there's a couple of issues with using them. Really, I think it's just go through, this is Doug Turner's blog, where he talks about some of those, like the async CTP. So if people want to use the new async keywords, just realize it's not going to work well with VS 2010. Light Switch Beta 1 won't work, but since Beta 2 is now out, you don't have to worry about that. The SDK also removes a bunch of stuff, so that's for C++ developers, you should definitely check out the compatibility details there as well.
If you're a phone developer using VB, something breaks there as well, so DB for?
No, actually, that's the compatible list.
Oh.
Oops. This is the incompatible
list. Sorry, I can't read.
Okay. It's okay.
My boss just found out I'm illiterate.
Okay, fantastic. So, then the other part is installation guide. So you actually did read this one.
Yes, I did. So the key thing here is, like, okay, if you have a TFS instance and that's been upgraded but VS hasn't, or vice versa, will everything work? And in that case, if they're separate church and state, different machines, yes, you can. You can have VS SP1 and TFS not patched, and they'll talk to each other. And vice versa, if you have TFS SP1 and a non-patched VS instance, they'll talk.
So the reason why I think this is good is just, a lot of times I can control what SP1 I have, but I have to wait for somebody else to roll that patch out onto that server or that farm of servers and so forth.
Now, where this is not compatible is if you have it on the same machine. So if you're running, like, TFS Lite, you basically both have to be updated. It's all or nothing.
Okay, so if I have the local version, a lot of people using TFS Lite as kind of their source safe replacement.
Yes.
Once you upgrade that, you have to upgrade via SSP1.
Yes.
Got it.
That is correct.
Cool stuff. So there's a lot of walkthrough by Brian Harry on installation stuff. Actually, so the one thing that I also wanted to call out is the load test feature. And really, the load test feature isn't so much a new feature pack. It's a change in the licensing. So a lot of times, I think it was 250 people.
Okay.
You can do unlimited load tests. So now you can actually, there's no limit now. So there's a blog post that walks through a lot of the details there.
Cool.
So.
Break more apps.
Yeah. And next is Charles talking about IE9. So IE9 is going to RTW Monday.
Yes, the 14th.
Yes, there's apparently some big party at South by Southwest where the movers and shakers will be there. So if you're at South by, definitely check it out.
We clearly are not going because we're not a mover or a shaker.
No. And so Dean kind of walks through, the whole experience where they've come with the product, and also talks about, just a thank you to the community for giving them. And you still find a lot of very passionate comments in these posts. And then the other cool thing is the announcement that Dean is actually going to be presenting at Mix 11. So it'll be interesting to see what they have up his sleeve for his presentation.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued for what's going on at Mix 11. So
yeah, so if you haven't signed up for Mix, definitely go. If you can't go, we'll be doing live streaming as well.
And one interesting thing was he does actually point out that there was two contributors that provided 400 pieces of feedback.
Yeah.
So between two people, and they went through and knocked them out. So, I mean, we are listening. So,
very cool. So this is the Azure Management Portal. There's a couple different changes here. One is they do have a new version of the SDK. The other thing is the change to the Admin Management Portal and some of the things for Azure Connect. So. One is it gives you, for Azure Connect, you now have multiple administrator support in the admin UI. It has an updated client UIs, so better status notifications, and use on non-English versions of Windows. The CDN stuff is really about that you can now use the Azure Web and VM roles as the origin for objects to be delivered. So basically, if you're using Azure Web and VM roles, you can now basically use the Windows Azure CDN to deliver that content and make it very scalable. And I want to make sure I get these countries right, because the static content in a website gets edgecast in US, Europe, Asia, Australia, and South America. So
what about Antarctica?
I think there's one dev in Antarctica, and we did try and get them to join the PDC because I think we had every other continent. That's Brian Keller's story. So cool stuff on the Azure team. But what's new with NuGet?
NuGet. So they upgraded to 1.1. It's all about how to upgrade. How the automation and getting the Explorer. So this is by Scott Hanselman, friend of the show. He goes through and talks about how to update it. Now there's
this is to automatically check for updates, right?
Yes,
so you get
yes.
the nice Windows pop up when there's an update.
You get the toast to the extensions you have. One big thing is that there is a gotcha for Visual Studio with NuGet.
Okay.
I believe, if memory serves, it's if you upgrade to SP1 and you had NuGet 1.0, you have to uninstall NuGet and then reinstall the 1.1.
Right.
So that is, that is a little gotcha. But, I mean, the Coding for Fun Windows Phone Toolkit has been NuGetted, and
ooh,
it's super, super easy. You know, if you want, you can check out my scripts on how I've automated stuff. So now I just
If only there was a Coding for Fun article on that. But Scott's actually done a great job on walking through how to NuGetify something.
Yes, yes, it's super easy. Brian Peek also has a really, I mean, I use Brian Peek's how-to on it. So it's super easy.
The NuGet Package Explorer also allows you to see packages. Have you seen that?
Scott Hintzman did actually go through it. I have yet to actually install NuGet 1.1 because I'm full of fail.
Okay. Well, that's good. So Windows Phone 7 performance. So this is two, Greg Duncan found this on the Code for Fun blog, but it's two articles that walk through Windows Phone 7 performance. You know, they talk about some of the things that we've talked about before, the performance progress bar, some of the things for tools that were replicating the calendar control, where it was actually building a control for each one and basically maintaining state for all these different objects, and shows how to do how they did their performance profiling. And I think at the end of the day, they increased performance like 5x.
Oh, wow.
So you can see kind of like the differences in where you're getting the performance pain for applications. So definitely app to try and check out.
Yep, definitely.
And that's our show. Picks of the Week!
Picks of the Week!
Okay, so what is this?
So this is by Fabian, who works over at the Xbox team. He did a post on his blog really quick, just real high level, about what he was doing to try to save some energy at his house.
Mm-hmm.
So he used MicroFramework and I believe it was a Netduino Mini to automate his
water heater.
Thank you. And reduce it when he's not there, and you know, bring it back to normal heat when he is there. So I contacted him and said, "Hey, would you be willing to do an article for us and give more source code, explained it, full wiring diagrams?" And it's super amazingly easy. He just uses a normal servo to basically adjust the temperature on the fly.
Yeah, it just does the ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch-ch. And he does like a little sleep in it, so it's kind of old school, but it works.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with doing hacks like that if it works.
Yeah.
So.
Definitely check that out. And the source code's available.
Source code is always available.
Cool. So my pick of the week is some students at Grand Valley State University, where Eric Mano.
Yes, Eric Mano.
Kudos to Eric. We'll call him a friend of the show, sure. They basically took real cockroaches. These are real cockroaches, and they're sending an electrical impulse through their antenna, and it's causing them to turn in specific ways. So I just wonder, like, how many times they had to send low power, you know, biphasic pulses, and through how many creatures that they tried. It's like, you know, they tried it on the dog, they tried it on, you know, all these other things, and they finally realized that they could control cockroaches. So I think this is cool, and I think it's pretty fun to, you can imagine having just an army of 100 cockroaches.
No, you get them to do Thriller.
Can you imagine? You're sending the exact same signal, or you tell them all to just dive on a girl. That's like a classic Jackass or something. Like, oh my God, the cockroaches just jumped on me all at once. Just crazy. The U.S. military better not know about this. That's what I'm saying.
It does. It seriously looks like something from a movie.
Seriously,
dude,
it's craziness. So I for one welcome our new overlords, and should be pretty exciting. And that is our show.
Yes.
This week. So thank you for
Thank you.
All next time.